You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio from South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Jake Jacobson.
And I'm Erin Wager-Miller. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, August 26th, 2019.
This is one that's been on my short list for a couple of years that I've been wanting to direct. It's about Ada Byron Lovelace, who was Lord Byron's daughter. And she also is considered to be the first computer programmer. And she is an
fascinating
woman.
Why don't I know this?
Exactly. Well, you're going to after you come see our play.
Later in the program, WFHB correspondent Michael Glab speaks with Kate Galvin, Cardinal Stage Company's second artistic director in its history. Galvin joined host Michael Glab on last week's Big Talk. The conversation continues on today's edition of Big Talk Extra with Michael Glab.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Raquel Anderson talks about her work as a volunteer with Middleway House, the Animal Shelter, and El Centro Comunal. That's Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, your daily headlines.
Earlier this month, the Indiana Department of Environmental Management, or IDEM, issued an advisory for the Paintown and Fairfax beaches at Lake Monroe, citing blue-green algae contamination. Blue-green algae can produce four toxins harmful to humans and pets. The IDEM detected one toxin in the reservoir called saxitoxin and determined that levels were significantly below those believed to be harmful to humans. According to the Friends of Lake Monroe, Paintown and Fairfax beaches were the only two sites tested. The IDEM advises dogs do not play in the lake. It also recommends that humans avoid swallowing water while swimming and bathing with warm, soapy water after coming in contact with lake water.
According to the Indiana Daily Student, Judah, Indiana resident Brad Clapper drove his SUV through a group of protesters on Saturday in downtown Bloomington. Affiliated with the anti-fascists, or Antifa, the group protested the presence of Schooner Creek Farm at the Bloomington Farmers Market. The farm's owners have been tied to the white nationalist group American Identity Movement, formerly called Identity Europa. The IDS reports that Clapper, whose young sons were with him, said the group was, quote, in his way, and he felt that he had no choice but to continue moving forward. Video published by the Facebook group No Space for Hate shows Clapper get out of his vehicle to confront protesters. Clapper then attempted to remove a protester's bandana while telling the group to get on the sidewalk. No injuries were reported. As of Saturday night, no police report was filed against Clapper.
During Bloomington's budget hearing on August 19th, Mayor John Hamilton presented his plan for the 2020 budget, which highlighted how the city would form public-private partnerships to fund affordable housing through the Community Development Financial Institution, or CDFI.
CDFIs are mission-driven financial institutions, and our CDFI-friendly Bloomington has been capitalized with $4 million split between public and private sources. Bank of America has offered an additional $10 million in low-cost financing to accelerate the effort. Look for great partnerships in 2020.
The city's Affordable Housing Fund received a $2.4 million commitment from Collegiate Development Group, as well as $1.2 million from the city's budget. The mayor also proposed a directive to help public servants, such as police officers and firefighters, live within the city limits through the help of housing supports.
Starting August 26th, officials will consider a rate increase for sewer customers belonging to the City of Bloomington Utilities. The increase in revenue will go towards modernizing infrastructure. The Bloomington Utility Service Board says that over the past decade, the Dillman Road wastewater treatment plant continuously grew to more than 90% of its capacity. The service board estimates that an average resident within the city should expect their bill to increase by about 72 cents per month. A customer at the same usage level outside the city should expect an increase of about $3.60 per month.
For our community conversation series, WFHB correspondent Sarah Vaughn sat down with two volunteer lobbyists with the Citizens Climate Lobby to hear more about their efforts to pass a nationwide carbon tax.
Local citizen lobbyists Robert Midas and Richard Durison say a carbon fee and dividend policy proposed by Citizens Climate Lobby will be a game changer for the environment. Midas is a local lawyer and law professor at Indiana University's Maurer School of Law. He and Durison volunteer for Citizens Climate Lobby. Midas says he joined CCL's lobbying effort because an issue as large as climate change requires a large, collectively driven solution.
I kind of realized that no matter what I did personally, you know, if we recycle and use less plastic, if we have two Priuses and buy solar panels for our house, it's still not going to be nearly enough.
Durison is a retired Indiana University astronomy professor. He is CCL's primary liaison to Republican Senator Trey Hollingsworth.
I've been concerned about climate change for decades because, as a planetary scientist, I knew about the greenhouse effect and I knew what we were doing and I knew it was going to cause trouble. And I remember talking to people in the 70s that use of fossil fuels was a problem. By the turn of the millennium, I was, you know, I pretty much was in despair about anything being done about it politically.
Over the past decade, Citizens Climate Lobby has advocated for a carbon fee and dividend policy. The policy puts a price on carbon at its source, then gives that money back to American families. Supporters say it will not only level the playing field for renewable energy, it could spur technological innovation and infrastructure development. Durison says he first heard about it in a talk Midas gave a few years back at Bloomington's Unitarian Universalist Church.
And when he described the policy, I thought, wow, might have the right politics to get passed, and was to scale to the problem. The problem is global, it's huge, and it permeates our economy and civilization. You can't just do one thing. You can't just insulate your house and then say, well, we're done. You've got to deal with it throughout the economy. I got involved because this was the first idea I'd ever heard that seemed possible to get passed politically, because it had conservative elements as well as liberal elements.
Midas points to the tremendous external costs that come from carbon-based fuel production. Those external costs are absorbed by society, and he sees that as an unfair advantage for energy producers.
We're living in a world that we believe needs a quick solution to climate change. And with rising temperatures and rising emissions and CO2 and equivalent emissions of methane and nitrous oxide and sulfur and HFCs, et cetera, we need to put a cap on it.
CCL's carbon fee and dividend policy made it into proposed congressional legislation in 2018 as the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, but the act didn't make it out of Congress last year. This year, CCL's policy has made it into House Resolution 763. House Resolution 763 would shift the cost to carbon-based energy sources to level the playing field between fossil fuel and renewables. Durison says it starts with a fee on carbon.
You put a price on carbon emissions. You assess it at the point closest as you can to the point of extraction of the fossil fuel. You have the fee accelerate over time. So it starts at $15 a ton of CO2 emissions or equivalent if it's some other greenhouse gas, and it increases by $10 a ton each year. The idea is that imposing a really large price, the kind that's effective in switching us away from fossil fuels, would be too much of a jolt in the economy. The idea is to do it gradually, but unrelentingly. And it also allows businesses to plan. They know what's coming once you've established the fee.
So if we decrease the carbon-based emissions, then the fee base goes down, and eventually we're moved over 100% is our goal to renewable energy sources.
Durison says the fees would then be returned to citizens as a dividend.
And the idea of that is that for households, they would start getting checks every month of a few hundred dollars that would help buffer some of the increased prices for products due to the rising cost of energy and carbon products, but it would benefit the lower and middle income families. It would more than offset the increased costs due to the fee. That way, the money is kept in the economy. And the whole idea of this kind of approach is that you're trying to correct an error in the market. The market is not pricing fossil fuels in a way that's consummate with their cost to us. So the idea is to impose this cost kind of artificially from the outside. It's important to keep the money involved circulating in the economy so that you're not distorting the economy itself.
A third part of the proposal involves creating a border adjustment for imports and exports.
Goods going out from the U.S. would get some rebate on the fee if they're sending goods to a market that does not have an equivalent price. And similarly, coming in, if goods are coming into our country from a country that does not have an equivalent carbon fee, then the fee would be assessed on that product based on the emissions involved in producing it.
Midas says some other countries are already using a carbon fee similar to CCL's proposal.
I would point to British Columbia and other European nations. British Columbia is right next door, and they've done it for over 10 years.
In a statement published in the Wall Street Journal in January, over 3,000 U.S. economists publicly said they support a carbon tax. Co-signers to that statement include four former chairs of the Federal Reserve. But Congress is proving tougher to convince. CCL launched a lobbying blitz in June that put more than 500 citizen lobbyists on Capitol Hill in search of new co-sponsors for House Resolution 763. The group says the effort landed them 15 new co-sponsors for the bill, but none from Indiana. And so far, they're all Democrats. Midas was part of that effort, meeting with Bloomington's representatives, Senators Todd Young and Mike Braun, as well as an aide from Representative Trey Hollingsworth's office.
I mean, Senator Young, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, if you remember, wasn't really even acknowledging openly that there was a climate change problem. His conversation has been very open with us and very respectful. And while we have not gotten him or Senator Braun or Representative Hollingsworth yet to sign on to the bill in either the House or the Senate, we do feel like we are far closer to that end. And they understand and they're very respectful with us in this discussion.
According to CCL, the House resolution now has a total of 59 co-sponsors, which it says is more than any carbon pricing bill has ever had. But the bill will need support from another 159 representatives to pass out of the House. Both Durison and Midas say carbon fee and dividend legislation will pass eventually. Midas says he's willing to keep lobbying until it does.
People ask us, why do you keep banging your head against the wall? This isn't going to happen. We say, no, it will happen when the time is right. We're trying to make that time that is right sooner rather than later.
Citizens Climate Lobby is planning another lobbying push in Washington this November. Locally, a raft of volunteers works to keep carbon fee and dividend legislation in the forefront of legislators' minds through emails and phone calls. For WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Aaron Wagermiller.
And I'm Jake Jacobson. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
2 years ago, Kate Galvin started as a director with Cardinal Stage Company. Along with managing director Gabe Glodin, Galvin says theater is expanding its reach to be more accessible for cost-conscious patrons as well as reaching out to previously underserved or forgotten audiences. Galvin joined host Michael Glab on last week's Big Talk. The conversation continues on today's edition of Big Talk Extra.
And Great Gatsby is the first big production of the 2019-2020 season,
yes,
for the Cardinal Stage Company. Hey, why don't we just go over the lineup right
Absolutely.
Now? Because
sure.
You might want to sell some tickets,
I
understand.
I would love to sell some tickets.
Okay, here we go. Now, there's essentially, as I can see it, two types of season, the general season and then the Cardinal for Kids production.
Right. So one of the things I initiated when I got here was we started selling a family-friendly subscription package.
Right.
Which we did for the first time last year. And it was a big success, and it's taken off even more this year, which I'm really excited about. So our main stage season this year, we're starting Great Gatsby right after Labor Day, and that's going to be running for 3 weeks till September 22nd.
Starting
September 5th.
Okay. Where?
That's going to be at the Waldron Auditorium.
Okay. Right in this very building.
In this building, right upstairs. So there'll be lots of dancing and lots of drinking and some tragedy thrown in there.
And then there are a couple of the Cardinal for Kids productions.
Sure. So our Cardinal for Kids series this year includes Charlotte's Web, which is a show we produced several years ago. We're bringing that back and putting a new twist on it. We actually have an aerialist playing the role of Charlotte.
Oh, boy.
Which is going to be really fun and kind of
give
a different spin to the show. We're doing Newsies is our big holiday musical at the BCT.
Charlotte's Web is October 18th through November 3rd. Where's that?
That is also here at the Waldron Auditorium.
Okay.
And then we move over to the BCT, the Buskirk Chumley Theater, for our big holiday musical, which is part of both our main stage season and our family-friendly season.
Uh-huh.
That is going to be running December 12th through the 29th. It's going to be really fun and fantastic. I'm bringing together the same team that did Beauty and the Beast last year, myself, the same choreographer, and the same music director. So it's going to be a really fun show.
Did I see this correctly? Written by Harvey Fierstein?
He wrote the book, yeah.
Yeah. Disney's Newsies. That should be fun.
Yes, 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 yes.
Okay.
And then...
January.
In January, we're going to be back at the Waldron in the Fire Bay for a really fantastic new comedy by Jen Silverman called The Roommate.
Uh-huh.
And this is going to be starring Constance Macy, who is the Cardinal favorite. That's going to be running January 30th through February 16th. And it's about a housewife who is recently divorced, and she's looking for a new roommate to help her, you know, make ends meet. And a woman moves in from New York who has a little bit of a dark past. So
Uh-oh.
It's a comedy and a sort of a buddy comedy, I would say, for women, which is a nice,
and there aren't enough
nice
of those.
Change of pace. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So I think it's going to be really great. I'm very excited about that show.
And then in March and April, Ada and the Engine.
Yes. So this is a show that I'm directing in the spring.
Uh-huh.
It's a piece that so you were asking about, you know, how I choose my shows. This is one that's been on my short list for a couple of years that I've been wanting to direct. It's about Ada Byron Lovelace, who was Lord Byron's daughter. And she also is considered to be the first computer programmer. And she is an
Why don't I know this?
Woman. Exactly. Well, you're going to after you come see our play.
Huh.
She's an amazing woman. She just was so brilliant and has sort of been overlooked by history. So we are actually doing in October, we're going to be doing our first Ada Lovelace Day in Bloomington. It's a day that is celebrated internationally, and we're going to be celebrating here in Bloomington and celebrating some women in tech here in Bloomington. So
it'll be a riot.
That's going to be great.
Yeah.
The show is going to be fantastic. That is March 26th through April 11th.
Uh-huh.
And then our spring kids show is The Stinky Cheese Man and Other Fairly Stupid Tales, which is one of my favorite children's books. And that is a play with music. So there's going to be some music in the show, some dancing. It's a whole lot of silly and stupid. It's one that I think parents and children will be able to enjoy. I mean, I would go see that show. It's, you know, even without kids, it's really fun. It's such a great book. So I'm excited about that. That is May 1st through the 17th at the Waldron Auditorium.
Uh-huh.
And then our final show of the season is a musical called Hedwig and the Angry Inch, which is an iconic rock musical about a fabulous woman named Hedwig who goes on an incredible journey from like communist East Germany to America and becomes what she calls herself is an internationally ignored songstress. And that's a piece that is really going to appeal to the LGBTQ community here in Bloomington. And that was one of the big appeals for me. I mean, it's a phenomenal rock musical and it really has a cult following and it's never been done here. Ooh. And we had a lot of success with Fun Home a couple of years ago and
yes.
really got a huge response from the LGBTQ community. And so we want to make sure that we're continuing to program shows that appeal not only to our main stage audience, but also to that group as well and get their stories on stage.
Okay, you're the artistic director of a regional theater company, a professional regional theater company. Does that make you a rarity? As a woman?
As a woman, there aren't that many. It's things are changing. But yes, you're correct that a lot of the people at the top of the regional theater world are men. So there's actually somewhere on the interwebs, there's an open source spreadsheet mm-hmm. that the theater community nationwide is contributing
yeah.
to sort of track the change in leadership across the regional theater world, because there are a lot of artistic directors who are coming to the end of their time at the theater that they maybe been running for 30 or 40 years. And so there's sort of a big wave of change of leadership happening right now and probably will continue to happen for the next 10 years or so as this change sort of ripples through the country and artistic directors are retiring and new people are moving in. But yeah, so I'm sort of part of the new wave.
Personally, have you run into specific obstacles or snags because you're a woman in this business?
You know, I think I've actually been fairly fortunate in my career that there haven't been many times when I felt like I was running into a problem because of my gender.
Yeah.
That has happened once or twice, and it is infuriating.
I would imagine.
It is infuriating. But I'm fortunate enough to say that I've been able to work with people who recognize my value as an artist and as a person. And whether or not I'm a woman has nothing to do with whether I'm good at my job, you know. And I feel very lucky because I've definitely talked to women who feel like they've run into that glass ceiling to a certain degree. I think I've been lucky so far. It doesn't mean it's going to continue.
Fingers crossed.
Yes.
That was Kate Galvin speaking with Big Talk's Michael Glab. The Cardinals' 2019-2020 season begins September 5th. Full episodes of Big Talk air Thursdays at 5:30 p.m. right here on WFHB.
Support for WFHB comes from Lauren Wood Builders. Lauren Wood Builders is a family-owned company that sources local materials and local craftsmen to minimize environmental impact and sustain community. More information is available online at laurenwoodbuilders.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring audio profiles of local volunteers who stand up for what they believe in, spark change, and create meaningful impact in our community. We invite you to get to know some of these volunteers through their inspiring stories of service.
Hi, I am Raquel Anderson, and I volunteer with the Latino Community Center, or El Centro, Middleway House, and the Bloomington Animal Shelter. I am a professor at Indiana University. I teach in the Department of Speech and Hearing Sciences, and I direct the bilingual training program for the master's level program. Well, to me, it's just my own interests. So I've been an animal lover all my life. I would bring cats and dogs into my mom's house and my parents, and they would say, okay, you can keep them. So I was very interested in doing that. I also was interested in the work with individuals, not just women, who face these difficulties in terms of sexual assault, domestic violence, and human trafficking. So it interested me to provide the services, especially for more vulnerable populations, such as Spanish speakers, since it's my native language. And with El Centro, it's just I feel I'm a Latina, that I owe something to the community. Because I'm in a privileged position. I can speak English. I was born a citizen. I have a good job. And a lot of people don't have these opportunities, and they deserve them. And that's sort of why I chose those three. I was brought up in Puerto Rico, and my parents were very active at a social level and very conscious and more social justice, and they were the minority for independence. So I always saw them. So they were kind of an example. And they didn't necessarily volunteer, as we know here in the United States, because it's a very different concept, but they were there. You know, my mom would go and make food for the students that were on strike. And my father would try to get them out of the university before the police came in. You know, those types of things. And you saw it. I kind of learned through their example. So I guess I'm a helper, but I don't consider myself, because I think you learn a lot. Learning has been an integral part of the process. And that learning has helped me to understand better the situations or the realities of the various individuals, including animals, and even the shelter and their needs. It's helped me to be more open. It's helped me to understand people better. That respect, even though I'm Latina, for example, and I speak Spanish, I don't have the same experiences as the community a lot of times with which I work. So I guess that I've learned. I would kind of tell people to do it because they want to do it. And there's a difference in how you approach it. I see it as a job, that even though I don't get paid, I'm supposed to be there. In Spanish, we say compromiso. I don't know the best word in English, but it's like you have to do it. It's something that people are dependent on and animals are dependent on. And I love it. One of the great things that has, and I think has changed me for the better, is that I have interacted with many different people that I would not necessarily interact in my everyday life. And I consider them friends. So it's kind of expanding your horizons as well at all levels. So you learn quite a bit. Thanks for listening. I am Raquel Anderson, and I volunteer with the Latino Community Center, or El Centro, Middleway House, and the Bloomington Animal Shelter.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to inspire, engage, and connect individuals to their community. Listen to episodes of Activate online at WFHB.org. You can read more about the profile, see photos, and connect to featured organizations and causes. And visit BloomingtonVolunteerNetwork.org to discover even more opportunities to serve, give, and advocate. Get inspired. Inspire others. Activate in your community. For WFHB Community Radio and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by G. Park and Harrison Wagner in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Activate is produced by Lucy Shake from the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Harrison Wagner. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumpstein, Scott Schmadeke, and Danny Graff. Executive producer is Kyrie Greenberg. For WFHB, I'm Aaron Wagermiller.
And I'm Jake Jacobson.